Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's never been more important to diversify your financial portfolio.
Well, that's right. The S&P is down 20% from the last year, and this year looks even worse.
Gold and precious metals offer a hedge against inflation and stock market volatility. And Legacy Precious Metals is the company Ken and I trust.
Protect your retirement account by rolling it into a gold-backed IRA or have metals shipped directly to your door.
Call our friends at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-691-2173.
Or visit buylegacygold.com.
John and Ken Show, John Cobell and Ken Champeau, KFI, AM 640 Live, everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Every now and then, we get an email from a listener, and it touches us. All right, maybe not touches us, but gets us to think, all right, maybe this is worth talking about with all the listeners. And her name is Catherine, and her email goes as follows. Hello, my father passed away last June. We inherited his house. When we advised the tenants that we were going to sell the house and gave 60 days notice, they refused to leave, and they wanted $15,000 to leave. Refused that. Then they said they couldn't pay the rent due to the COVID restrictions. You know, that was allowing people, not that they, I don't know, we could find out if they had COVID, but it was suspending the requirement that you pay rent for a while. We're now a year later after my dad has died, and we still can't get them out. Now they want $40,000 to leave the house. The moratorium for evictions in LA County is extended to the end of the year, and I've heard it's likely it may be extended again. So we own a home, but we have no rights to it.
I am flabbergasted by this. Let's get Catherine on the air here.
Hi, John and Ken.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for writing to us.
Have all our sympathy. This is ridiculous.
When was the lease set to expire?
Well, we've been on a month-to-month for a while. So, I mean, a month-to-month is basically the lease is up at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Before I get into this, though, I just want to kind of give a disclaimer to you and your listeners that I'm not representing any company, agency, employer, county, or city. I'm just a concerned citizen that is going through a difficult situation with this housing situation with my brothers. And my brothers and myself, we're not like millionaire landowners that are making a living off rentals. This is our parents' home, and they worked very hard to buy it, to maintain it, to pay it off, so that when they passed away, they could pass it on to us to help us in our future. And John, you had mentioned, well, how come you can't sell it? And let me clarify that. We can sell it. It's on the market. But guess what? Who's going to buy a home where people are in it and they refuse to leave? And basically this COVID, what's it called? A COVID-19 tenant protection resolution basically says that we don't have any rights to evict them.
Even
because it's called a no fault eviction, meaning a no fault eviction means that, you know, there's no problems. But before COVID, if you wanted to sell your home, you get 60-day notice, like you were saying, and you could sell your home, right? Now you can't do that. And with these new resolutions, John and Ken, if the person is a nuisance in the home, you can't evict them. If there's unauthorized people in the home or unauthorized pets, you can't evict them. You're not allowed to.
So all the clauses in your lease have no power?
No.
There's no force of law to?
No.
So it's anything
because
goes?
Of this resolution.
They could violate all the terms of their lease?
In L.A., and by the way, make it clear, you're in L.A. County somewhere?
This home is in L.A. County, correct.
I can read
to you, protection from eviction for no-fault eviction reasons, nuisance, unauthorized occupants, or pets. And as of June 1st, 2022, now people who say, like, hey, you know what, I again have issues because of COVID, and they meet a certain income with, it says, at or below 80% area medium income, and their income is in that level due to COVID reasons. Guess what? They don't have to pay rent.
What's their COVID reason?
And the self-certification letter that they turn into the landlord is basically, I looked at it, it's check boxes that you check to say,
it's self-attesting,
because
right?
of this.
All right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, that's called self-attesting, right? I just say I have this.
Self-attesting is a great way
to
commit fraud.
Right. And just to let you know.
What a horrible set of legislators, supervisors we have to allow this abuse.
They want to protect the riffraff.
This is not protecting anybody. It's protecting criminals. These guys are just
to let you know, on this self-certification letter, it says on the bottom, towards the bottom, like, optional, you can provide proof, but it's optional. You don't have to prove that you have COVID-19. Right. You don't have to prove that you don't have, you know, the income.
Have you asked anybody in the legal community for any help with this?
Yes. They basically say, you know, there's really nothing that we can do. You can go to court, and you can try to go to court, but they're just going to say, you know, because of this resolution, there's nothing that we can do.
Who passed this thing?
The LA County Board of Supervisors, and I called them. That district that the house is under is under Hilda Solis. I called their office. I told them our situation. They said, okay, well, call the Department of Consumer Business Affairs. They may be able to mediate. I called them, and they say, you know what? Sorry, because of this resolution, the COVID-19 tenant protections resolution, we can't do anything.
About this money that they wanted.
Well, what happened was, you know, we had, they had the protection because the state had it last year until the end of the year. So they filed for that, like I said in my email, and they had protection for that until the end of March. Then as of April 1st, they had to start paying rent on their own, which they did, because they knew as of April 1st, if they didn't pay rent, we could evict them, right?
Right.
And so then, John and Ken, because me and my brothers were just like, oh my God, like we can't sell this home. It's our home. It's our family home that we grew up in. It's our home. We own it. We can't get these people out. So we're like, okay, well, we'll try to negotiate with them and get some kind of we have to pay them. Let's try to figure out a reasonable amount. Well, their attorney came back and said, okay, if you pay them $40,000, then they'll get out of the house in 60 days.
How many people are in there?
Even off the top of my head, I don't know. It's a family. I don't know how many exactly.
What kind of family? What are their ages? Are there kids involved?
I don't know.
Are they working?
Did they leave the place a mess? Are they good tenants?
No, so this is the deal, right? This is the deal. So after my father passed away in June of last year, you know, and my brothers were like, okay, we're gonna go ahead and sell the house. But prior to that, when my mom died in 2011, my dad got super depressed. He got really ill. We had to put him in a care facility, and we needed money to pay for the care facility because, as you know, these facilities can be very, very expensive. So we rented out the house to these tenants, and they've been great. They've been great for all these years, like 10 years. They paid rent. They took care of the property. Not a problem. Then when we came to them and we said, hey, we're going to sell because this is our family home and we, you know, need to sell it. And, you know, my brother, by the way, who moved to Florida soon after my dad died, he moved there. A hurricane came, wiped out a big portion of his roof. The house is a total loss. He needs that money to help him. And we can't access that money. But these tenants have been great until we said, hey, you know what, we need to sell the house. Well, then we got a letter saying, well, we really love your house and it's in a great neighborhood and we can't find another house that's comparable to yours that we can afford to rent in the community. And then that's when we got hit with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
it's not your problem,
John.
Are they working?
As far as I know, yeah.
Okay. So they don't have any kind of COVID issues, do they?
I don't know, John. I mean, I don't know,
you
know what the reality is.
If they're all going to work and going to school or whatever they're doing, they don't have any
COVID issues. No, they just like what they got. And, you know, the rental market's tight. The rental market's always tight and expensive. So have you raised the rent on them at all over the years?
We can only rent at a certain amount every year in LA County. You can, I think this year it was all, I think they actually froze it, but I think before that we could only raise it like 4%.
Do they owe you
any money? What's happened over the years is this house that we've rented, and we've tried to be kind and helpful, but because of, there's restrictions on that, we haven't really been able to raise it to the amount of money in the community.
You can't be kind and helpful to criminals. That's what these people are. I don't care how nice they seem to be. They're criminals.
No, they're playing hardball, that's for sure.
Well, what they're doing is a scam. It's fraud.
They're taking advantage of the Board of Supervisors'
weakness. Idiots, Hilda Solis, is allowing these fraudsters to hold your house hostage when you and your family needs the money for your own issues, like your brother's housing situation. That's wrong and that's cruel. And Hilda Solis and the rest of these supervisors should not be enabling these criminals with this phony COVID provision. Well,
so just, let me tell you this. So in talking to other people about it, including my brother, you know, I'm thinking like, how can this happen, right? How can people that own their own home and be told you cannot evict people to sell your own home? Like, how is it the tenants have more rights than the people that own their own property?
It's because of the politicians.
My brother about it.
He was like.
No, he basically said, you know what? LA County has a bad homelessness problem. So guess what? If you tell everybody they can't evict people, they don't have as many people to deal with that are as homeless. And then people that own property and they can't, you know, they're not getting their money. They can't get these people out. So guess what's going to happen over time? These people are going to lose their property. Who's going to benefit from that? I don't know. Maybe banks, the city, the county, they're going to be able to have these properties to do what they want
There's something corrupt going on. Because none of these policies make any sense. I don't know who they benefit. There's something corrupt going on here.
I never ever imagined that I would be in this situation. I mean, I can't tell you how many times
alone.
My stomach is just sick. I'm sick at my stomach that this is happening.
All right, Catherine. Well, if we hear from anybody that can help you, we'll forward the information. But we really feel for you.
I want to just share really quickly that, you know, letting people know out there that you're not alone and to please contact the county supervisor that covers your district and complain. And the only way that we're going to make a difference in this situation is speak up and be heard over and over again. So please contact LA County Board of Supervisors. Can I give the phone number?
Yeah, go ahead.
Please, yeah.
213-974-4111. I'm hoping that some attorneys maybe hear this and we can start a class action lawsuit against LA County regarding this.
Yes.
It's just unbelievable. We live in a society now that tenants have more rights than we do.
It seems unconstitutional that you cannot sell your home after your tenant's lease has expired. That seems to be an abusive intrusion by the government on private property. And I just cannot believe there isn't a legal way out of this. You just need the right attorney.
All right, Catherine, thank you very much. We got to go, and we'll keep us posted on your end, too. And if we get anything, we'll send it to you.
Hey, you know what? Thanks so much, John and Ken. I really, really appreciate you allowing me to share my story.
Okay. That's listener Catherine. And quickly, again, it's a situation where they have a family house they want to sell, but the tenants will not leave. And thanks to LA County's tenant protections, especially due to COVID, which include eviction bans being extended, they can't get these people out of the house. More coming up.
We're going to talk now with Sam Quinones. He wrote a piece for Los Angeles Magazine. It is comprehensive about why we have so much homelessness in Los Angeles, not only the history of it, how we got here, but how deep and widespread the problem is and why it is extremely depressing and dispiriting. There are parts of it that it's hard to believe that all this has actually happened.
Yeah, he makes the case that LA's homelessness crisis response is actually spread across the country. You see the same response adapted in many other parts of Southern California and even in other states. And it is a horrible response. He spent a lot of time talking to a woman by the name of Estela Lopez, who works for what they call a business improvement district, which encompasses Skid Row. And that's got to be quite the job. But I'll read you one paragraph before we talk to Sam. In Lopez's view, what created today's Skid Row includes municipal abandonment combined with methamphetamine, the abdication of drug addiction and mental illness treatment, misguided charity, and the city's settlement of court cases that in practice now limit enforcement of laws governing drug sales, street habitation, pimping, and assaults. In recent years, Skid Row homelessness marked by meth abuse and tents has spread across Southern California and many parts of the U.S. By 2018, 10 cities emerged in Mid-Wilshire, Santa Monica, Highland Park, South Central, and along freeways. A strip of tents on Venice Beach has actually become known to locals as, I've never heard this one, John, Methlehem.
Methlehem. That's
cute.
Yeah,
instead of Bethlehem, it's Methlehem.
All right, let's get Sam Quinones on. Sam, welcome. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for having me on your show.
This is an astonishing article that you wrote here.
Great.
I can't imagine how much work you put into this, how much you've seen with your own eyes. There's so many different things we want to ask you.
Sure.
Why is it, you've made it clear that a huge component of this is the meth and the mental illness. Why is everyone so resistant to addressing it? Why are they so afraid of the blowback from these homeless advocates who only want housing? Why are they so afraid of them?
I think it's in part because a lot of folks are afraid of stigmatizing the homeless as drug abusers and so on, meaning that if people come to view them as that, they may then shy away from various attempts to and approaches, strategies to help them. My feeling is that that we need to address the problem as it really is. The housing costs are certainly part of why people end up homeless and why people have difficulty coming out of homelessness. But there's many, many others, and certainly drug addiction is a big one. And certainly this methamphetamine that's coming out of Mexico in the last 10 years, that my book, The Least of Us, which is the book that really broke this story, talks about how the way they're making meth down there in the last 10 years really has created a methamphetamine that is very quickly creates symptoms of schizophrenia, paranoia, delusions, you know, this kind of thing, and very quickly leads to kind of inability to guide one's life, and very quickly then very often leads to homelessness, even though when it doesn't lead to homelessness, if you end up homeless for another reason, say an operation you can't afford, say aging out of foster care, many domestic violence, all that. It's so prevalent now. The quantities of meth coming out of Mexico are staggering, and that very quickly, once you're on the street, meth is almost a way of allowing you to fend for yourself on while you're on the street, and very quickly then you fall into kind of again, the meth psychosis that makes it very difficult to get out of homelessness. But the reason people, I believe, are reluctant to talk about this issue is because they feel that if you talk about drug addiction and mental illness as a part of the reasons for and the reasons why people are homeless and stay homeless, that you will be stigmatizing them and that people will be less willing to help them, this kind of thing. I think that's probably not true, but certainly even if it is, we need to address this as it really is, and not as we kind of wish it were.
That just doesn't seem rational to me. They're out there. Their brains are fried by this meth. It is producing schizophrenic-like symptoms. It's clear that's what's occurring. Everybody sees it almost every day. Right. You have to treat this horrible condition.
This is
where
you need sort of conservatorship. You need to be able to take these people in for treatment because clearly they don't have the wherewithal to seek it. They're just so strung out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's some of the, you know, the synthetic drugs that are coming out of Mexico, as the saying on the street goes, they change everything. And one of the things they do change is whether or not people are actually able to make rational decisions in a tent encampment where they're living where they're maybe freezing to death. Certainly in some parts of the country, this is very common, losing digits to frostbite, where they're being pimped out, beaten, living without sanitation, et cetera, et cetera. And you find people still saying, no, I don't want to leave, or no, I'm fine here. And a lot of this has to do with the prevalence, the enormous prevalence and supply of the two synthetic drugs that really typify our synthetic drug era, which we are fully in right now, which are fentanyl and methamphetamine. And it does call into question whether people actually have the ability to make a rational decision. I was in southern Indiana recently, and several months ago, and I'm talking with a woman there whose daughter literally froze to death rather than leave the tent encampment. She had a five-year-old at home. Her mother was raising the five-year-old. She would beg her daughter to come leave the cold. This was in January, and the girl wouldn't do it. And 2 weeks later, the mother got a call that she had frozen to death. This kind of thing really calls into question whether or not we need issues of commitment. You know, how can we commit people who are really not functioning for themselves, or a danger certainly to themselves and quite possibly to others at times.
Hi, can you hang on, Sam?
Sure.
Hi, this is Sam Quinones, a writer for LA Magazine, who wrote quite a story you have to read about LA Skid Row and how the way it's been addressed by LA politicians and activists has made it spread to other parts of Southern California, other parts of the country. Here's another great paragraph. The loudest narrative on homelessness comes from far-left activists, that homelessness is caused by high housing prices, and the only solution is affordable permanent housing. Until enough of that is built, people should be allowed to occupy sidewalks. Those with other ideas have been cowed into silence. I think that sums up perfectly the problem. That's what we've seen for too many years now. We'll talk more. This is at LA Magazine, lamag.com. John and Ken Show, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
We're talking with Sam Quinones, a writer for Los Angeles Magazine. You go to lamag.com, and there's a long article, fascinating.
But it's a good read. Skid Row Nation, how LA's homelessness crisis response has spread across the country.
So it's a great read. It's very detailed on how we got here.
It's one you just don't see often enough. You've talked about Michael Schellenberger. He writes from the same perspective, but it's rare that you find this. And the paragraph I just read is that the activists, they control the argument most of the time. They shout the loudest, and the politicians tend to bend their way, and their solutions are horrible. This idea of housing first, when you really, in many cases, especially with Skid Row and other parts of the city, you have a real drug problem with meth just out of control.
Let's get Sam back on here. Following up on the paragraph Ken read, here's another line that you wrote. Activists have picketed the homes of elected officials, screaming obscenities through bullhorns, egging the houses of some. Homeless activists twice shouted down the city council over the summer as they were prohibiting tent encampments within 500 feet of schools and daycare centers. Yet they had to get police in riot helmets. These protesters were vaulting over barriers. What explains the vicious anger of these activists? I don't understand why they're this enraged and they get violent.
And I'm not sure I'm actually the guy to explain it to you, I have to tell you. I mean, in some cases, I suspect it's youth, you know, and youth is prone to rebellion and this kind of thing. But honestly, I'm trying to describe what I see. I went to the first of those council meetings, and it was remarkable. And then the second one was even more remarkable, shall we say? I think it gets beyond wanting compassion. There seems to be at times people who are kind of wanting to show how radical they are, rebellious they are. But truthfully, I think you'd have to. I haven't really interviewed any of them, and so I really don't. I can't answer your question very intelligently, I'm afraid.
Well, Sam, let's talk about this part of what you wrote. permanent supportive housing. And it's become the mantra in the last couple of years. This idea is no good anymore about shelters. The activists and a lot of the politicians don't like that. They want permanent supportive housing. Talk about what you wrote concerning, you know, what that in reality is.
Well, permanent supportive housing is the idea that you would give people housing, build people housing for people that would also include a variety of services, job counseling, addiction treatment, variety of things like that. And the truth is, as many people I spoke to said, that's not a bad idea if it comes after a continuum of other forms of housing that lead you out of the street and are more like more controlled. But the problem with permanent supportive housing as it works now, it seems, is that people are taken from the street directly to this kind of housing, and this kind of housing, then they're allowed to use drugs. There's no stabilization of these folks beforehand. So there needs to be a couple of stages, maybe at three or so, but even before, in the minds of people I talk to, before you get to permanent supportive housing. You just can't put someone from a tent and put them into permanent supportive housing and expect that on the whole that will lead to a successful recovery from drug addiction or problems with mental illness. You need stages. And so they're just, but the problem is the idea is people don't like the idea of you putting people in housing that may be controlled, where their actions may be controlled.
Is there any way to get past what people like or don't like or what they believe, especially when it comes from these crazy activist groups, because what they are promoting is unrealistic in some cases, simply doesn't work. I mean, when are we going to get past everybody's feelings and look at what's exactly happening in the world? Because unless we get
that's a great question. Again, I don't think as a reporter, I'm the guy to answer it for you. I would basically leave it at that. I'm trying to report the story as I see it. Where this all leads, where it ends, how it will be resolved, that kind of thing. I guess I'll report on it when
yeah.
we get there.
I mean, you quote the city controller Ron Galperin's report that less than 1,200 units have been produced in 5 years. Estimated costs for several projects exceed $700,000 per unit. They've hardly built any transitional housing. To get them detoxed.
That's the problem. I think, a lot of minds of people, the problem is really what you just said, that there's no transitional housing. There's no taking people from the street and getting them into a more controlled environment where they are away from dope, where they are able to kind of stabilize. And then that kind of transitional housing can take several forms. And then eventually, at the end of all that, a permanent supportive housing option may be a very, very effective way, but it doesn't seem to work well if you're just taking a person right out of the tent and putting them right into a permanent supportive housing, where in fact there is no rule about whether or not they can use drugs, and so many oftentimes people end up using drugs while they're in this permanent supportive housing.
You know, it just seems like the city government is completely collapsed. That they just aren't capable of doing any of this. You can write eloquently, and you have, about the ideal, but they can't do anything that seems to be useful.
It's an interesting. I'm not sure I answer that. It's an interesting stalemate. It seems has affected City Hall where. A lot of politicians are very afraid of the ire of activists, mainly because they're full timers. They don't stop. They're always, you know, they don't have another job, essentially. And number two, it seems to me that on the other side, there's a lot of people who look at our tent encampments, look at what's happening in our, you know, along the freeways or on Venice Beach or everywhere. We see it all over and wonder how on earth this is okay. How on earth this is a proper result. This is the result that we want. And I think a lot of people are beginning to really see this is, I can be a very compassionate person, but I don't see how, in the minds of a lot of people, I don't see how what I'm seeing on the street equals compassion.
Yeah. And so, by the way, we're running out of time, Sam. You wrote another good part here, because I know this is part of your research about the drugs and particularly meth. And you talk here about how in 2013, the traffickers in Mexico mastered something called P2P, which allowed them to make far more of the drug and make it even more potent. And the price really dropped. And this had a big effect on places like Skid Row.
Yeah. P2P is an ingredient in one way of making methamphetamine. That's a fairly old method. They didn't need to use it because they had another ingredient for another method. It was far easier for a long time. But now the Mexican government put the kibosh on that ingredient. And so they switched to this method of making methamphetamine that that requires this ingredient called P2P. The one benefit really to them of this is that if you have the chemicals, you can make P2P yourself. You don't need the actual chemical, and you can make it in such enormous quantities that you can then just dwarf any production that you used to make with the other methods. With the other method, you can make it with P2P. And what you're finding is the supplies out of Mexico since 2009, but really since about 2012-13, when there was a widespread mastery of this method, have spread in quantities that are just staggering all across the country, where Mexican methamphetamine never used to reach, say, before 2013. You're seeing it in Kentucky, you're seeing it in Vermont, you're seeing it in various places all across the country. But one of the first places it landed in a huge way was Skid Row, L.A., in about 2013. By 2015, people in the streets there, cops and so on, tell me that by 2015, it had actually replaced crack as the dominant drug on Skid Row, which crack had been in charge kind of Skid Row for 30 years at that point. And now it's really a secondary importance. Meth is the thing because the supplies out of Mexico are so just staggering. There's so much of it. And that's why on the street, very often, it is almost free. The problem is, of course, it creates these symptoms of, as I was saying, of schizophrenia. And
right.
It's doing so wherever this meth reached, as it reached across the country, whenever it reached, say, into Kentucky or into West Virginia or what have you, you found it created homelessness. And it also created this rapid onset symptoms of schizophrenia, basically meth-induced psychosis.
All right, Sam, we got to go, but we thank you so much for talking to us. LAMag.com is where you can find Sam Canona's story, Skid Row Nation, how LA's homelessness crisis response spread across the country. Thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
All right, more coming up. John and Ken Show, KFI AM 640, live everywhere in the iHeartRadio app. All right, well, it's happened again. I looked at this story and I said, wait a minute, is this the same guy? Didn't we do this story a couple of years ago? Because it's about a cannibal in Germany. And sure enough, it is a separate case. Germany has privacy rules when it comes to your legal rights. So sometimes you could actually be arrested, put on trial, and they're not allowed to cover it, the media. And then they kind of put out the results sometime later. So a 42-year-old man, only identified as Stefan R., it has been announced, was found guilty for killing another man in a cannibalistic fantasy situation. Hmm. Yes. The defendant killed a 43-year-old mechanic. And by the way, this guy was a 42-year-old teacher. Hmm. He was convicted of murder. He got life in prison. This happened September 2020. According to the story, they met on a dating portal and agreed to meet for sex at the teacher's apartment
okay.
in Berlin.
Then I got to say, the mechanic, you're asking for it. You meet strange guys on an internet site, you're asking to be eaten. You really are.
A lot of people meet.
Yes. And so if something bad happens, it's like your fault. You're meeting strangers on the internet. It's like
it's probably low odds, but you're right.
Low odds, your fault. You put yourself in play there. Somebody eats you up.
It's a pandemic. How are people going to meet in person as much?
You don't. You just don't.
Apparently they I don't know whether or not they had sex, but he killed him and then he chopped him up.
Would you rather be lonely or be dinner?
And he spread the parts in different neighborhoods in Berlin. Police spent weeks looking for the missing mechanic, but they found some bones in a forest.
So what parts did he eat?
It doesn't, this story, I'd have to look for the version I have from Associated Press doesn't give those kind of...
Like, if you would eat a person, what would you eat?
Nothing.
Well, think about the best parts on a chicken or even a steak. I don't know.
It's the legs and the breasts.
I think you're getting the idea.
Right. Chicken.
There
wings.
Are guys that eat brains, which is like...
Yeah. But on a cow, it's like the midsection.
That's true. Right?
You don't eat
that's
a cow
where
leg.
The cuts are? Right.
Yeah, right. I mean, the loin areas.
Oh.
Right.
You know what? And Germany's kind of soft. They had to formally declare this was a particularly grave crime, which means he is not entitled to automatic parole after 15 years. That's customary in Germany. You for murderers, what, I guess, yes.
You see what happens with the
lax? I was right. In 2006, a German court did convict another man who was named Armin Muse of murder and disturbing. They call it disturbing the peace of the dead. That's another charge. He is still in prison.
You go on a German dating site.
And there was a third one. A German police officer was convicted of murder in 2015 for killing a man he met in an internet chat room devoted to cannibalism. See, that's why I wonder, if you meet somebody in a portal or a chat room that's devoted to cannibalism.
The chat room.
I don't know about that in this case. It just said it was a dating portal. It didn't say it was cannibalism. Well, I'm referring to a 2015 case where it was an internet chat forum devoted to cannibalism.
You don't get to complain if you went on a cannibalism website.
And then you agreed to meet up and you get eaten.
Why? And then you're pissed off you got eaten?
All right, we got more coming up.
John and Ken Show, let's get the latest from the KFI Newsroom. KFI AM 640. Hey, Ken, did you know that gold is the only currency that's held its value since the dawn of money?
Well, I did. Thanks to our friends at Legacy Precious Metals, the most trusted name in gold investing.
Investing in gold protects you against inflation and gives you a hedge against stock market volatility.
Don't leave your retirement to chance. Call Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-691-2173.
Or download your free investor's guide now at buylegacygold.com. That's buylegacygold.com.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.